Hi, this is Bill Bradshaw from Bill Bradshaw Photography in Somerset, England, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
16th floor, 17th floor, 18th floor, 19th floor, 20th floor.
And this is episode 21.
Going up.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. This is Rhea Windcaller, your Cider MC. And this is a weekly podcast where we are chatting with cider makers, cider enthusiasts, and people within the cider trade around the world. And on this week's chat, we have Bill Bradshaw from Somerset, England. And I'll be talking about that chat with Bill in just a moment and giving you some more details about who he is. But please do not be deceived by the name Bill Bradshaw Photography and think, well, that has nothing to do with cider. The thing about cider, it's not just about making the cider. You got to grow the apples. You got to find the apples. You have to produce all the things that makes the equipment for apples. There's just so many layers, and then you have to market it and kind of host it and have festivals. There's all these products that come together to bring cider into your very cup that might just well be in your hand right now, I do hope. So just because it says photography, this guy, Bill, he has quite a bit of info, and I kind of adore him. He's like one of these people that you just immediately adore. Probably in the same way that I adore Dave White of Whitewood Cider, just good people that always have this kind of great smile. Or Ellen and Sue, two sisters who kind of work behind the scenes, bringing together the CiderCon conference. I really adore the women at the Palm Boots. They're kind of kicking up this whole women's sector of cider making and people, gals in the cider trade. And I like Diana Mask. She's like a contact person who reaches out to me, sends me stuff to try from Angry Orchard. I really adore that. There's a lot of cool people out there, and that is why we hang in Ciderville. I mean, Chris Jackson, Kurt Shear. I could go down the whole list. Field Maloney. I love Judith Maloney. Yes, love. Yeah, I don't know. I'm still just kind of reining in there on that heartthrob that I have for cider. And I know that you feel it too. And that's why we like to hang out in Ciderville. So we're going to get to Bill's stuff in a moment while I digress. I do want to say thank you to so many of you who connected with me recently on Twitter, reached out, whether I followed you or you followed me, or just joining in on the conversations. There's a whole bunch of folks. There's a Honeypedia. They're all about bumblebees and stuff. Oldfields Orchard. Let's see. We have Dorset Nectar from Spain. I'm going to mess this one up. I always screw up my French and my Spanish. And if I start drinking, forget it. It's off. Or actually, sometimes I get better. Then I start throwing in some Dutch. And don't even try to have me do English well. But I could do an English accent. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 Rhea, don't do that. Anyways, I want to say hi to Sidra Berezaitua. They're on Twitter. Citizen Cider up in Vermont. Vermont Cider Week. Oh, before I go on, Vermont Cider Week, I just want to say that there's going to be some photos up on the Facebook page from the Vermont Cider Week. There was a tasting for celebrating the 250th year, and a number of cideries were there. So some kind of fun photos from, the tasting itself. And it's not like your typical, huge cider event where folks were just focused on drinking cider. It was a little bit of a mix of that, but really, really nice photos. And I want to just thank Amanda and Julie up in the Vermont State History Museum. Also Stowe's Cider. Yeah, I pronounced that correctly. They're also from Vermont too. They reached out, we connected. And Godfrey Groom, we connected up there, and along with that, Garth Butt. And I like this guy's profile. He wrote, "I like beards, cider, chicken wings, Star Wars, checkered shirts or check shirts, trainers, music, bacon, sunglasses, and biscuits. Not necessarily in that order. You can read the darndest things that people put out there, and it kind of all makes sense. Finally, Kyle Shearer and I connected. Kyle is starting up another cidery. You might recognize his last name, Shearer. His dad's is Kurt Shearer down at Millstone Ciders down in Maryland. We talked to Kurt last week about his rustic barrel aging of ciders. And Kyle was working at Millstone, and now he's doing this other project. So I hope once they kind of get that up and going, we will be having a chat with him. Brilliance runs in the family, and may it always be so, and may you find that on your front steps too. Then also Redemption Cider Works, they have just a wild chili pepper profile, so I don't know what they're doing, habanero or something like that. Love Thy Cider, we've mentioned them before, just kind of goes on, and I just know that what happens on Twitter is that there's a lot of engagement. So if you want to hear what's kind of happening there, you could follow me at Cider Chat. I'm on Twitter all the time. Send out a hello and just start following people. And I really recommend another way to kind of engage on social media. People could feel a little shy about theirs, but don't be afraid to retweet something that you like. It's a little bit different than just liking it. Liking's nice, but when you retweet it, it kind of sends it out. And who knows, they might actually say something back like, hey, thanks, or what are you drinking, or how does it taste, or where'd you get that? And that's a conversation. It's about the chat. And darn, don't I know that cider really engages us in that way. Going up, indeed. That's the land of Ciderville. And for those of you who might be thinking, you know, that sounds really familiar, that going up or floor number 15, 16. Well, I was in the elevator at CiderCon in Portland, and I couldn't help but record this amazing voice that would remind us when we passed our floor, and then had this very sad voice when you weren't going up in the elevator, but
going down, going down. Lobby.
Is that trippy or what? Especially the lobby, that's like the main floor where everybody was. You weren't quite sure what it was saying there, but somehow I think the cider got into the pipes and the air ducts of the Hilton where CiderCon was held. And, you know, that's just what happens in Ciderville. Let's now move on and get rolling with this great chat with our buddy from the UK who's really moving the cider agenda forward for all of us. Bill makes his living as a photographer, and he has some beautiful photos, so there'll be a link to his photo blog there. And also, on that same blog, you could find out about his other projects. Most recently, his book that he co-wrote with Pete Brown. It's called The World's Best Ciders, Taste, Tradition, and Terroir. And this book won a very large award that he'll be talking about during the chat. It is a fantastic book. I happen to have a copy right in my hand here. The photos are amazing, just really amazing. It you know, reminds me a lot, like, for those of you who are in the craft beer world, like Michael Jackson's book, and essentially the Encyclopedia of Beer. And they go over cider basics, the history of cider, apple orchards and the cider year, you know, the cycle of the orchard, how cider is made, of course. And they break it down into Europe, the Americas, and that isn't, you know, North America, which includes Canada, and then South America, which is, in this book, Argentina and Chile, and also Australia and New Zealand. So there's some touching into South Africa. It's just an amazing book. You could have it on your coffee table. I actually have it in my office, and I pull it up from time to time when I want a little bit of inspiration. Just amazing reading. I mean, because Pete is a fantastic writer. Bill is a fantastic photographer. It's a perfect, perfect grouping there. Those two guys are on a other big project right now called The Cider Hunters, where they have a documentary. And they are trying to get that going out and trying to find the world's best ciders, kind of dovetailing on that book or so. So there's also a link to that. But Bill also has two other books. I mean, if that wasn't enough, before this first book came out that they won the big award on, he had Cider, The Practical Guide to Growing Apples and Making Cider. It's called An Enthusiast Manual, which I really dig that. And The Guide to Welsh Perry and Cider. So obviously, not a lot of moss growing underneath this guy's, you know, tail there. He's moving around. He's staying really, really active. He is involved all over the place and kind of, as a cider ambassador, gets pulled in to talk and represent his country there. And that's exactly what he's doing the day that we're meeting up. I met with him earlier the day, on the day that he was going to be speaking at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. OMSI is what it's called for short. And Bill did this presentation in the beginning, and then at the end, there was a big tasting and all that, but he really set it off. And at the end of CiderCon, he was kind of like the MC up there with all the UK cider makers. I really wanted to talk to him about the difference between UK ciders and US ciders. So without further ado, let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Bill Bradshaw from Somerset, England.
This afternoon, you're doing a UK cider tasting and presentation.
Actually, the tasting isn't today. That's Friday.
Okay.
There's a grand finale we're doing some. So I'm going to introduce three cider makers from the UK. For different parts, they make different styles of cider. They're all really good British cider makers. A lot of real fruit there, British fruit, cider fruit. They've all won awards. They all use wild yeast. So it kind of takes all the boxes I love about British cider. Mm-hmm. But this afternoon at OMSI, I've been asked to do a presentation on my own. And that, I was trying to decide what to do. James said, well, you're going to do one. You can do it on whenever you want. And I was just thinking, well, I suppose it's got to be about British cider. And that's why I'm here. But what aspect of British cider? Well, I figured, let's just show people my favourite bits of British cider. Because I can talk about that. You know, the things that make me push the shutter. You know, the culture that we have. Mm-hmm. I love that. You know, people say, you what? You take photos of cider? That's just, another drink in a glass. How much is there really to take photos of? But there's so much more. And it's all the stuff around it. Mm-hmm. That's where the name I Am Cider come from. When people were saying, There's nothing to take photos of. I don't understand what it is you do. I wanted people to see a whole set of images and think each one of those images could be saying, I'm cider, I'm cider, I'm cider. Mm. And that's what it is. You know, the name's not about me. I'm not cider. It's about the things that are part of the cider world, the culture, that a lot of people don't know about, you know, especially internationally speaking, but often even in your own country, you know.
Right.
With the kind of resurgence we've had over the last 10 years, I think people have been much more interested in it. And, I've done well out of it. I get to do a lot of travel and meet a lot of really interesting people. I don't make any money out of it. It's like a charity thing, but it's a passion thing. And I couldn't have planned that. It was just a personal project that I realized. It got so big, I knew I had to put it online and do something about it. And from that, you know, came blogging and some books, and hopefully maybe even some films.
Oh, exciting. Maybe we could talk about that. But I want to go back to that piece that you were saying about what you see when you click that camera. And I know you've talked about, I think you're talking about the culture.
Yeah.
What do you see that I might not see? Because you're a photographer, and you have that eye that the public or the average person who doesn't study it can see. Is it that glistening pint of cider with the sun shining through? I mean, that's how I would approach it. But what does your eye kind of go towards?
When I was at university, I had a great piece of advice. One of my tutors said, well done, everyone, you've all graduated. This is my secondary photography. And he said, one piece of advice, always do personal work. Because if you're a freelance photographer, you're kind of a, gun for hire mercenary. And you're basically always doing photos for someone else with an agenda. Mm-hmm. So, you know, okay, we got to make these fire extinguishers look really sexy, or, you know, we got to make this cheese look like the best cheese. And, you know, there's always an angle. So it's not about what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And when I got back to Somerset after uni, someone asked me to do some personal or some work, basically, around a project they were doing where they were teaching school children about Somerset's apple and cider heritage. And I went along, and, you know, they got money from the government to do it, so they had to have documentary evidence of how the money was being spent. Mm-hmm. They said, Bill, can you just come and take a few pictures of what they're doing? And I loved it. And, you know, that kind of really introduced me. And from a child's point of view, you know, I was trying to look at it through their eyes and seeing the kids just come alive in the orchard. They were lobbing apples at each other full pelt. And, you know, they were getting a lot out of it. They were learning. Mm-hmm. They were out of the classroom. You know, fresh air, fruit, you know, they were seeing the animals, and they were watching the kind of the harvesting process, and they were doing poems and pictures and stuff. And eventually that project came to an end. It was sort of 6 months later, and I just carried on going. Going back to the personal work, that's the great thing I do, or the thing I feel most fortunate about with cider, is that it is personal. It's not for anyone else. So I can be really, I don't know, what's the word, almost greedy. If I want to push the shutter with something, I don't have to think, oh, would the client like this, or is that representing it right? Because it's totally my own point of view. And I think as long as I don't want to sound big-headed, but as long as I keep shooting for what interests me, it's hopefully going to keep interesting other people too. And the more you shoot, the more you realise there is, you know, to learn, to figure out, you know, the subtleties, the characters, the personalities. It's kind of an open-ended thing.
I want to really encourage the listeners in Ciderville to go to your blog and just look at some of the photographs, because they're absolutely beautiful. And, you know, I was looking at some of the photos that you took when you were out here in the Northwest, and with Dave White.
Yeah.
Just such a great photo of him. You really captured his spirit.
Yeah, it's so hard to capture, because he's always got his hat on so low, I've got a thing. I always want to see people's eyes in a picture, I don't want any sinister. And he's the least sinister guy, but his hat's always so low, it's really hard to get it.
Right.
It's like you've got to wait and pounce when the moment's there. But yeah, I mean, this is such a great area, the Northwest. You know, it's the Cider Association's really good here. They're really on it, really forward thinking, doing a lot of cool stuff. But it's such a beautiful landscape, too.
It is, yeah. I would actually say that anywhere in the world is a beautiful landscape. I imagine with somebody like yourself, you could find that treasure and wherever you are.
Well, I suppose that's, you know,
I mean,
that's a nice compliment.
Places that you have been that you've been like, oh, I'm not so interested in shooting this, because you're not just doing pastoral or the orchard.
There's always an angle, and I suppose that my, you know, my kind of freelance background, my professional experience, makes you quite decisive about which angle you're going to take.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It might not be a beauty angle, which is often my main kind of motivation, is I just want it to look really nice.
Oh, interesting.
Really honest as well. I'm not about polishing up stuff too much.
Yeah,
I want to be really honest, and I don't want it to be about the photography.
Right.
I don't want to overlight it or stylize it. I just want it to be that moment, snap.
Right.
You know, like a documentary style, I suppose. But no, there's been nowhere. You know, even if I'm in a factory, I was in a kind of a production facility yesterday, which isn't your classic green orchards, mountains, you know, old geezers, you know, curmudgeons, all the kind of cool stuff. But, you know, there's an interesting angle there. It's part of the industry, and you can't deny it. And, you know, even if it's about 1,000 feet of steel and, you know, millions of bottles moving around.
For some people, that's very sexy.
Well, yeah, it is, yeah.
Machinery like that could be very, you know, sexy. And certainly in the cider world, if you get that, you're like, oh, I feel pretty hot, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I expect that you are hankering to get onto that cider just like I am too. But first, let's have a little word from our founding sponsor at CiderCellars.com.
Cider Chat is brought to you by Cider Cellars Imports.
Ciders made on the farm from traditional apple varieties like King's Favorite, Porter's Perfection, Buttery Door, Brown Snout, Foxwhelp, Stoke Red, and Yarlington Mill.
Celebrating British craft ciders. Try saying that when you've had a few ciders.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Linda. That is awesome. What pronunciation. I love it. All right. Well, we're going to get back to this chat with Bill. And I want to say that he had corrected me and said, well, there isn't a tasting during his presentation. But actually afterwards, at the AMSI, there was an amazing tasting where a lot of the attendees had brought ciders to share. So I got that a little bit confused. But, you know, that's what happens when you are in that land of Ciderville. Okay, back to this chat with Bill Bradshaw from Somerset, England.
What you're going to be talking about this afternoon.
Yeah.
And that's over at the museum mm-hmm. here in town. What are you going to be leading everybody through there? And I'm really hoping to get to that talk, too. I'm
okay.
really excited, but...
I'm starting out with a few facts about the British cider industry. You know, this is an industry event. People are, you know, they're talking about numbers a lot and, mm-hmm. you know, percentages and all that stuff I don't understand. They don't particularly interest me a lot of the time, but I know they're really interesting for other people, so I thought it'd be interesting to start off with some official British cider facts from the National Association of Cider Makers. They're like the US ACM, MCA. I always get out the wrong way around.
United States Cider Maker Association.
Yeah, it's not the Marine Corps, no.
Yes, right.
I always get it the wrong way. You know, a few facts of that are just about the size of our industry, the main areas, you know, how many pints we drink. And then from
how many pints do you drink?
As a nation?
Yeah, and is it, do you see it's primarily a pint or an imperial pint?
It's, in England, it's just a pint. There are no other pints. It's just, you know, here,
right.
that's another thing I go on to in the presentation is comparing, because I basically talk about the things I like about British cider, and I love the fact we have these big pints.
Mm-hmm.
And we take them for granted. You know, it's just a pint. It's so normal in the UK, but here the pints are smaller, and
mm-hmm.
actually, you know, you get these ones, you get those ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact our pints are 568 millilitres, mm-hmm. you know. And then, you know, you've got the different shaped glasses. It's just a real icon of the British pub.
Do you think that that larger pint lends itself to folks taking their time a bit because it is a little bit larger, or if it's after a football match, people are boom.
It doesn't seem to slow anyone down.
Okay.
I'm just wondering. I don't know why we ended up with an imperial pint. But like I said, in England, it's not a big deal. People would think, well, why the hell are you going to talk about pints? Because they, you know, you don't get them outside England, you know. And it's just, for me, it's a real representation of, you know, how you drink cider.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these days you can drink it in a nice wine glass at lunch. You know, there's a million ways of doing it. But, you know, if I'm drinking with my buddies, it's pints.
Right, of course.
Hopefully not too many. Because, you know, you stand up, fall over pretty quick. Too many of those.
Well, what about the ABV, the alcohol by volume, for the classic UK cider?
You need to look at 6.5%, really.
Okay.
We don't have the sunshine you have here. I know your apples can ferment to like 10.5. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Great, but not anything we'd get in the UK. You're getting cider stronger than that. We either have an exceptional year or it's been chaptalized. It's put some sugar in the production to beef it up. But for classic farmhouse British cider, you need to be looking about 6.5%.
Mm.
You know, you get a lot of the kind of more commercial tap ciders, and because we have the bigger pints, they'll get watered back to 4.5.
Mm.
And there's a lot of those. And they're really easy to find. They're much easier to find, actually, than the farmhouse ciders at 6.5.
Mm-hmm. And what about the drinkers in the UK?
Yeah.
Men and women?
Yeah, I think it's much more, what's the word? It's much more unisex, I suppose, than beer. I mean, beer has a bit of a problem in the UK, and maybe the same in the States. It's very male, very masculine. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, all the marketing has been done for men.
Mm-hmm.
And people have tried to do feminine kind of approaches and feminine campaigns for feminine beers. But
mm-hmm.
cider's always been pretty much 50-50 straight down the middle, male or female drinkers.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone likes it, you know, that's fair enough. But it's another great thing about cider. It's kind of more unifying in a way than beer. Wine can be seen as sometimes a bit snobby or snooty.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Cider is kind of quietly sits between the two, and I really like that about it.
And what about women cider makers in the?
There aren't many, I have to say. There are some. There's a girl I know, Lizzie Hex from Hex Cider in Somerset. She's the seventh generation of a cider making family. she's got to be in her early 20s now, and she's winning awards.
Nice.
You know, she's at e-college still, she's getting a degree, and then she's going to go into the business and carry on cider making, which is really good, really encouraging. But on the whole, there aren't a whole lot.
Right. So one of the things I've been hearing a bit here in Little Chatters is that in the U.S., we're classically known as like just busting out like yeast out of a bottle, going for it, and that the Brits are really looking, going, geez, you know, folks aren't like so, like the enthusiasm is really coming out of the U.S.
Yeah, I agree.
And yet here, I think we always look back to Europe, you know, the U.K. and France and Germany, Austria, you know, Spain, looking at the traditions over there in kind of like it was with the Belgian beer trucks.
Yeah.
And really wanting to discover and find out these styles that have been made for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. So are you seeing anything like in that 10-year period, if we look back, you know, we're in 2016 right now, or even a shorter period, is there a kind of a notice by the public, or maybe we should start with the cider makers? Are they, what's the chatter that you're hearing there, if any?
There's definitely been a renaissance. We definitely had it in the UK, but I don't think it's as it's not as vibrant and energetic as you have it here. Like you said, it's kind of boiling over and fizzing here. It's a really exciting place to be.
Yeah.
That's why I love coming here so much. It's so so much enthusiasm.
Yeah.
England, we've seen a good, I don't know, we've seen some good progress, some good change, you know, a real resurgence of interest. We've seen a lot of sort of commercial jumping on the bandwagon as well, which is always a kind of a good sign. Mm-hmm. You know, temporary, a lot of it, like fruit cider specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But people are still only waking up to the fact that the US makes cider.
Interesting.
What? They didn't make, why they copy us for everything? You know, it's like, well, you know, they've been doing it a long time too. Just, you know, they kind of lost it and now it's coming back.
Right.
But they're pretty open-minded about it. They're pretty excited. They're, like I said, there's not the same kind of level of enthusiasm.
Huh.
You know, they can't believe I'm going over to the States again to do some more cider stuff. They're like, really? You know.
And is that because they see cider as so common that they don't want to explore it? And there's also laws that could hamper that or just etched in tradition.
Maybe if I was to compare it to coffee in the States, I mean, I haven't thought about this, so I might completely be going down a rabbit hole I'm going to get wrong, but, you know, coffee's really big here, it's really popular,
right.
But to, you know, outside the industry, it's not a massive deal, there's nothing particularly new about it, there's a really good coffee scene, but, and we, you know, in a way, that's kind of how cider's been for hundreds of years in the UK. It's always been there, it has its ups and downs, and, you know, it's, I guess people would just shrug about it and go, well, you know, it's just cider.
Mm, mm.
So it's much more tempered in terms of chatter than you would get over here.
Right.
But a lot of the companies, the big companies, are excited because of the exports. British cider is really cheap, really, really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing I'm going to talk about a little bit this afternoon, or just mention how, you know, it's significantly cheaper in England. It's really profitable to make cider in England and try and sell it over here.
Yeah, well, I work kind of frequently over in Europe and in the Netherlands, and talking to importers over there, and they are saying the same thing, that people here just won't pay that premium price for cider in the same way that we'll see here in the U.S.
They'll pay it for beer, and they'll pay for wine, but cider's seen as like a poor cousin, and think cider should be cheap. That's often quite a European mindset.
Because it's from the farm that you...
Because apples grow on trees.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah, the farming, in particularly in the UK, the farming tradition,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were the farmers were the original kind of cider makers.
Yeah.
They made it just like they would grow a sheep or, you know, some potatoes. It's just another crop, another product.
Right, right.
And I suppose that's somehow got a hold. And the way the whole economy's, you know, been worked out over the hundreds of years is that, you know, if we can keep the apples cheap and cider making fairly cheap, it's like a long-term survival strategy.
Mm-hmm. And also, you have more cider apples that are there versus in the U.S. People are just kind of running at breakneck pace to just get that in the ground or graft it on to get it more available.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, because it really excites me that people are doing that. And I find it hard to know I'm going to be drinking ciders that aren't made from what I, know as British cider apples.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally open-minded about it. And a lot of the ciders I have here aren't made that way, but they're really good.
Yeah.
And I think there's a kind of a dichotomy going on where, on one hand, I'm really excited that there's kind of classic cider fruit going in, and it's all going to start appearing soon. But, you guys have your own amazing apples here too. And I love the fact there are people going, do you know what? I'm just going to make really good cider out of what we got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think America's pretty good at that.
Yeah.
You guys are very open-minded. You'll try anything here. I mean, anything. There's nothing you can't do. In terms of experimentation, there's no tradition limiting you going, well, you can't stick kombucha in a cider. Well, you can. This is Portland. We'll do what we want.
Right, right.
A leg of lamb, as Nat did, Reverend Nat.
That's right, yeah.
It doesn't mean it's going to be great, but, you guys will do that. We'll never do that in England.
Mm.
And I think you can do that with your own great heirloom varieties in your apples.
Mm-hmm.
You play with your production techniques and fermentation and yeast. Mm-hmm. You'll kind of science it,
Right.
It's the kind of people always say, Bill, what's the secret of British cider? How'd you get that taste?
Yeah.
The secret is, I'm really sad to say, there is no secret. We're just really lucky with the fruit we have.
Uh-huh.
If you just had the same fruit we had and didn't try too hard, like we kind of don't in many cases, uh-huh. Just let it do its thing, keep it fruit forward. That's kind of how you end up with British cider.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, the fruit forward. And I wonder if you had 10 British cider makers in this room right now and they took juice all from that same tree but brought it up to their different cideries, how diversified that would be.
It'd be really good, and that'd be a really good way of, judging the cider maker.
Do they do that at all? And that kind of like geek, because we're pretty geeked out here. And
yeah, you guys are geeks. Yeah. You guys are geeks here, and I love that about you guys.
Yeah.
Because I used to think I was geeky, but, I came here and I'm like, man, I'm so not that geeky. People are always talking about bricks and, stuff like that, and I'm like, yeah, okay.
I mean, British cider makers even do that, or is it kind of like
we don't deal in bricks. Bricks is an American thing. I think it comes from winemaking and brewing.
Yes. Yeah.
So we don't know, what the hell bricks are.
It's just a feeling, or
we know it's about sugar, but that's about it. But yeah, we use a hydrometer.
Okay,
we measure gravity that way. And we go, we got 1056. Woohoo!
yeah.
And the final gravity is 998. So, oh my God, it's really dry. And but people say, well, how many bricks is that? I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know how you translate it, but you guys are happy to have those chats, and it's all in your head, and everywhere I go I hear people talking about stuff like that.
Right, pretty exciting. Have you made cider?
Yeah, I used to make it every year, and then I just got so busy every autumn with photography and doing books and stuff like that, sadly I don't get to these days.
Yeah,
I'd really, really like to again, even if it's just 5 gallons,
Right, right.
And I know so many people that have cider apple trees where the fruit just falls down and it leaves, it rots. So I'll come and collect the fruit. If I get the time, I will. Mm. But the last few years, I haven't, and I love it.
Mm.
It's exciting,
It is, it is. I was kind of curious for the American going over to, or any, not just Americans, but any tourists coming to the UK, should they land in Heathrow? What would be some tips of coming in and exploring UK ciders?
If you're coming over specifically for cider, I would try and fly into Bristol.
Okay.
It's in the West Country. Now, it's a smaller city. It doesn't have as many international flights, so that is going to be harder and possibly more expensive. But Bristol has the advantage of being surrounded by traditional cider-making areas. So you've got Herefordshire and the three counties to the north.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Wales to the west. Mm-hmm. And it's got Somerset, Devon, Dorset, Cornwall, all to the south.
Yeah.
So it's become a kind of, like a little cider town, really. And they're quite proud of their cider heritage. There's a lot of kind of references throughout the town. There's some really good specialist shops there. There's the Bristol Cider Shop where you can get a lot of really good cider. There's a floating barge called the Apple, which is, you know, just serve cider. Really nice. Bristol Cider House.
Well, where is the Apple located?
It's in Bristol, on the wharf. It's kind of permanently moored.
Nice. So,
you know, a bit like you got here in town in Portland on the Hood River. Imagine a barge just tied to the edge there. It's just surf cider. It's great.
Wow.
So that's a really good place. And it's a good city. You know, it's quite a chilled out city. It's quite alternative.
If you were going to fly into Heathrow and go to Bristol, is a train, I'm sure you could get
You could,
that.
But it's, you know...
takes time.
You'd need to go into London from Heathrow and then get another train out to Bristol. So you could do it.
It would take like a day's travel.
Yeah, you'd probably want to give it a day, especially with any jet lag and stuff like that. Sure. You know, bit of extra time. But I think when a lot of people come over, they don't just want to do cider. And I think, you know, that's fair enough too. If you want to go and spend a couple of days in London, go and do that.
Sure.
Because, you know, London's pretty good fun.
Yes.
There are a few cider bars there. It's not always the best place to get it, but, you know, you can have a fun there, do some shopping. And I know if you're, you know, if your listeners are anything like me and my wife, you know, my wife, she has enough of hearing about cider now and then. So if you're traveling with family, you know, they don't want to do all cider stuff. So
right.
That's not a bad way of doing it, Heathrow or Gatwick, and then head west. But, yeah, Bristol's not a bad place to base yourself.
In the U.S., we're used to having hotels like that are, you know, popped up everywhere, and you go on a certain web browser and you get that site and you could order that up. But is there an option to like do a walking tour through Bristol and the different areas of?
There is a cider map.
There's a cider map,
which you can, if you Google Bristol cider map, you know, it'll it'll come up. You can download it, and it just kind of. It points out none of the key spots, you know, the pub called the Orchard Inn, the Coronation Tap is another pub, the Apple, those kind of things. And that's a good place to start.
Right.
You know, if you're in town for a day, 2 days, you could do a couple of them. And then maybe rent a car and decide who else you want to go and see.
And cruise around, knowing that it's a little bit different than driving here. How does that work for you doing that?
Driving here?
Yeah.
Easy. Love it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I've traveled a lot. I'm used to it.
Yeah.
I was raised in Australia for years. And I've done a lot of backpacking, a lot of traveling. You know, been to Europe a lot. So I'm pretty cool with it.
Good.
But, and the roads here are just amazing. It's so big.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's the thing I think that people need to get prepared for when they go over to... the UK that is a little bit more windy, and you have to be watching.
I think it's much harder for you guys.
Yeah,
it's not only on the other side of the road, but the lanes are tiny.
Right,
you can't see around them.
Yeah,
you know, and there's no signposts. You know, part of the fun with cider, or trying to discover cider in the British countryside, is getting lost.
Yes,
and going, I've no idea where we are. But it's beautiful here.
So you get lost, and would you... expectation is that you kind of go down the road, and all of a sudden there's a sign that says cider by the barn.
Yeah, and often you'll just be driving around, and you'll see someone scribbled a really crappy little sign saying, cider this way, and you can go in. And there's another thing I'd like to talk about is, you know, we make some really good cider in England, like some of the best in the world, but we also make some of the worst, both industrially, you know, in terms of white cider.
Right.
But also in terms of the kind of cider you can get on the side of the road.
Ah.
You know, a sort of local farmer producer. You know, it's just... if it's not very nice, they'll, you know, you don't have to drink it. But a lot of people get that pressure in like, oh, it's supposed to taste like that. You know, it's supposed to be a little bit vinegary and smell of manure. Nah.
So what
not
is,
really.
A
little bit of vinegar, you know, it's not uncommon.
Right.
A little bit of acetification. It doesn't sound nice, you know, I can see you frowning, but to a certain extent, a very, very small amount. It can be quite refreshing, and particularly in a very dry Somerset sort of farmhouse cider.
Sure.
But, you know, I just want to put that out there, that we can make some terrible cider in Britain.
Well, part of my frown, I think, is I'm wondering, what is... the kind way to manage that as a tip, because culturally, you know, don't want to be seen as a bombastic American coming
in. No, of course, I get that.
So I'm wondering if you...
I think it's always good to, you know, you guys are very polite when you come over, but I think it's always good to ask if you can try stuff, if you can sample it, and, you know, anyone who's really serious about it, of course they're going to let you try it, you know. And even if you don't like their cider, maybe they've got some apple juice or some cheese you could buy. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're feeling some pressure to buy something, but you don't want to buy the cider,
right?
Maybe just, you know, get something else, see what else they got.
Right.
Or just say, look, I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm. I can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
We won't mind. We'll laugh. We're not going to be offended.
Oh, good. Good to know.
You won't be the first person to say it.
Right, right. And does it make sense to have kind of like a little mini growler or a crawler?
Take your own if you want, but if you're traveling, I wouldn't bother. Most people will sell you cider in. We don't use growlers. We have these kind of plastic canisters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure why we use those. Hmm. Growlers are so much nicer.
Plastic, like with a handle?
Yeah, with a kind of...
A loop
handle? Yeah, like a loop handle.
Yeah.
You know, you can get them in litres or gallons.
Yes.
You know, yeah. If I'm having a party or friends over the weekend, I'll go and buy a couple of gallons. They always come in that. That's, you know, British gallons, so that's 8 pints.
And they'll feel fine filling it up. It's not like that's from a particular cidery, and if you don't have the label on that cidery...
They'll stick a sticker on it.
Oh, okay.
You know, you buy Jim's cider, he'll stick a Jim's cider on it, and all this one. You know, they've got them all there. They're ready. They know.
And if you bring that label, though, to another cidery, they'll be fine.
Well, they'll take the piss. They'll say, what are you going drinking that crap for, you know? But yeah, they'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, that's just kind of like knowing some of the etiquette to help making your travel go. And I know you're so knowledgeable about that, so that's why I'm tapping in there.
But. I just think you got to be honest with people straight up. And, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's all obvious, but you treat people as you want to be treated. And, if you know, hopefully they treat you back that same way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think part of being British is... You know, taking a mickey out of yourself. We do that a lot. You know, we take the piss out of ourselves all the time. And I think you got to take it as well as the other.
Right.
It's just the way it is. It's just, you know, it's kind of like fencing. You have to kind of have a little fence with words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, make a joke about yourself. Bloody Americans, whatever. What do we know about it all? And, you know, then the English will be all embarrassed. They're like, oh, no, it's so glad to have you here.
All right, Is that like something that you can actually do in a week? Go into that area and feel that you've kind of covered that region for good sense? Or
yeah. I mean, we have so many cider makers. They're everywhere.
Right.
Within the cider regions, I should say. Not everywhere in the whole country. There's, you know, certain regions there. And, you know, if you're going specifically for cider, I would go with a list of who you want to see. And try and organise, say, hey, look, I'm here, I'd really like to visit you guys. Mm-hmm. Email them in advance. Some you'll never hear from. Some will get back to you straight away. Mm-hmm. Some will get back to you, like, the day before you turn up, when they should have got back to you 3 months ago when you first emailed them.
Mm-hmm.
But just try and put together a bit of an itinerary. Mm-hmm. If they know you're coming, mm-hmm. you know, they'll often try and make it, depending on the time of year, but they'll try and be available for you. Sometimes you can just turn up. There'll always be someone there, but it might not be the cider maker or the owner or whatever.
Best time of year to go?
May's lovely. End of May when the blossoms on the trees.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite nice. I get most excited personally when it's harvest, which is the worst time to visit in some respects because...
They're very busy.
Oh, these bloody tourists coming around again. Yeah, I'm cold, I'm tired, I'm grumpy. I've been pressing cider for 3 weeks. But visually, it's amazing.
Mm.
You kind of really get a feel for it. And the smell, you know, the kind of sweating apple fruit. Mm-hmm. Damn, I love that.
Yeah. Is that September then?
No, because cider fruit, in Britain, the traditional cider fruit is much more late flowering and late harvesting. It's more like October, November.
Okay.
I know your fruit here will be really a lot earlier. Yeah. You know, with the dessert varieties and stuff.
Right.
So, you know, it probably is September, October for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, you know, a lot of people harvest October. I mean, it depends on the season to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Some years are earlier and later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some cider makers I know are still pressing end of December.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll press right up to Christmas, and if it's a really big year, they'll go on through to the new year.
Mm-hmm. And are most cider makers pressing all year long, or...?
No.
They're...
That's another thing I never really clocked is we don't do apple storage.
Huh.
I mean, you might for dessert fruit, but that's not in my world in the UK. I don't know about that actually.
Right.
But in terms of cider, when the harvest is ready, you start pressing and you make it all. You press everything you can until it's all gone. and that's it. Your cider making is done. Well, the pressing is done. The cider making continues, but we make it all once a year.
And so that's completed, and the harvest is done, and and you're finishing the cider. And
hose it all down, put it in the shed, get on with the fermentation.
Wow. Whew. Is there a lot of sharing of equipment between cider makers, like the press equipment and all that? Is there quite a bit in that way?
I don't know. I mean, I suppose there's a lot of help, but I think because everyone's doing it at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. I think a lot of people will press, you know, hey, we've got some apples, can you do some pressing for us? You know, they arrange to come along, but I don't think they can necessarily share equipment. It's like, can I borrow your equipment? If I bring in 20 bags of apples, you know, can you press 15 for me? You can keep the other five, if it's good fruit. We know people do that.
Yeah.
But I think when the presses and the mills are up and running and going, people just, they just go, you know.
One of the things that really changed here, not too many years ago in some ways, well, I actually was quite a while, it was around the Homeland Security piece of the actual cider houses had to become very sanitized.
Yeah, I heard about some of that.
Yeah, and it was actually for some of the cider makers, it was kind of a scary experience having the feds show up and their black sedans. And
The federal government have a kind of a, I don't mean to be disparaging, but they've got a kind of a slightly sinister, heavy punch feel about them from where I see it anyway.
Yeah.
Because I'm not American, I'm not kind of used to it, but I remember visiting cider makers and there would be people there with clipboards and they'd be going, no, you know, really strict, like really black and white rules. And we don't have that in the UK.
You don't have that.
We have customs and excise come round.
Sure.
Make sure we're not fiddling the taxes and duty whatever. But and trading standards. But, you know, on the whole, it's pretty friendly, pretty good.
And so the equipment, because some of these old presses had to stop being used because...
Really?
They didn't meet the standards, or the cider room had to be all put up with, like, you know, the washable walls and all that jazz. And I'm imagining, in if I went over to the UK and I came to upon that, it would be the mill or outside, maybe in the barn.
It is amazingly more relaxed in the UK.
I love that.
And we're still fine.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get ill. Yeah. You know, we don't get poisoned, whatever.
Right.
I know another thing here is, you know, you do the hand picking.
Mm-hmm.
I think primarily because the dessert industry, it makes sense to hand pick for the dessert fruit. But for the cider industry back home, you know, that's just kind of a ridiculous notion for us.
Right.
Why would you hand pick it, you know? Wait till it's ripe, it's going to fall on the floor. And when there's enough of them on the floor, we'll go and run through the orchard and scoop them up.
Yeah.
And it seems bad, you know, when I look at it through kind of a visitor's eye, because I'm thinking, God, the apples are quite muddy, and, you know, like they're recycling the muddy water to wash the apples. But, you know...
It works.
I trust the product, you know.
Right.
I just, you turn that squeaky barrel handle, you know, the tap, and the glass fills up, and it just tastes amazing. Mm-hmm. I think, well, I can't argue with that. And I've been doing it for hundreds and hundreds of years that way.
Right.
And I know you can get problems with other weird flavors and stuff, but, you know, somehow, for the most part, it works out.
I think that's a beauty, and I really want to encourage listeners to go over and have that experience, because it's such a laissez-faire type of attitude, and it's a richness of a vitality of the community, and that we get a little sanitized. In some ways, we could go with our federal government, but, you know, if we go... truly there. We are the federal government. We set up a very people suing each other and doing all that. It's kind of gets shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, I think it's probably a very difficult line to walk for you guys
too.
You know, I don't envy you that at all.
Yeah.
But I think if people are passionate and cider makers are smart enough, and they are here on the whole, I think you guys are much more science kind of aware in terms of the cider making process. Done a lot of British cider makers, because a lot of British cider makers just do it this way because Grandpa did it this way, and it works.
Right.
And they don't necessarily understand the fundamental sciences of this, that, and the other. So it's completely different in that respect. And I do feel for you guys here, when you have those strong kind of federal laws and the tick boxing and stuff, it's tricky.
And yet we know how to get around it, you know.
Well, there's always a way, isn't
for
it?
Years.
You
yeah.
always kind of
find not get a around
way.
It, but yeah, but find a way to
make
not,
it work. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Not have it become an obstacle. I think that's it, and the enthusiasm really pushes us forward. So, Bill, you're here for a while in the States, or are you going to be touring around more in the country, doing more cider?
Not this trip. I'm here till Sunday, then I'm back to the UK.
Okay.
I have to kind of limit my cider travel a little bit. My wife is a cider widow, and, you know, there's so many other countries to visit.
That's a good T-shirt.
I'm off to Australia later this year.
Nice.
For 2 weeks, judge the Australian Cider Awards, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, yeah.
And interestingly, I'd like, you know, I don't know if it's the right thing to do again, but I think I could make a kind of a comparison between what's happening here and in the state, sorry, in Australia.
Mm.
Both kind of slightly new world cider making.
Yeah.
You know, not with you know, not using the same kind of traditional apples we use back home.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there'll be a lot of parallels and a lot of differences. And the gaps between those two are where I really want to point my camera. You know, I want to get under the skin of the cultures in different countries and the way people do it. They've got a really strong winemaking heritage there.
They do,
But for the States, I'd like to come back. I'd like to do some more on the East Coast. Places like Virginia. I've never been to Virginia, which sounds criminal. I almost don't want to admit that, but I've got to go there, you know.
Yeah, and they have a cider trail too.
Absolutely,
some cool stuff. So I want to make sure, we just mentioned you have three books, two that you co-wrote with Peter Brown, and they're all recent books, you know, World's Best Cider, Taste, Tradition, From Somerset to Seattle.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty big deal there in that book.
Yeah, it was. We had a...
I want to say not was, really.
Well, we had a... It was a bit of a roller coaster. I read one of Pete's books on holiday... I don't know, 2008 or something, 2009. It was like a last minute purchase. Literally, I was going to Portugal the next morning. My wife said, go to the bookshop, just get a book. You never bring a book. Go and buy a book. There's some really cool looking beer books, you know, in the bookshop. And I ran down there. I go, oh, that looks great. Yeah, beer, brilliant. I'll go that. Got there, started reading it on the way out. Loved it. And I was thinking, this guy writes how I like to shoot. It's pretty honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... He has a lot of humour in his writing, Pete. And I was brewing beer before that, part-time. I used to brew beer professionally when I first moved back to Somerset, before the photography kind of really found its feet. So I, you know, I've always had a real interest in beer. And I said, Pete, you know, when we got back, we got to try and do some work together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at my cider stuff. I've been doing this, but I'd like to do something on beer. Let's go to Belgium and do a road trip around Belgium, Belgium beer. And he's like... Hang on, let's do a book on cider, because you've got some good images there, and that'd be pretty cool. And we started talking about ideas, and then realised no one's really done a big book on cider. We'd look at the World Encyclopedia of Wine, and the kind of equivalent of beer, and think, well, they've been done, and they've been done really well. Let's do one on cider. And we started speaking to a publisher, and they were like, yeah, that sounds pretty good, but the world's not ready for it yet. I was like, okay, well, we decided to keep doing it anyway, just hope.
What year was that they said the world wasn't ready for it yet?
I can't remember. It's probably 2010, 2009, I don't know, something like that. I can't remember. I'm terrible with dates.
Someone was sleeping at the wheel there, if you think about that, because it was really kicking.
I was kind of trying to argue with them a little bit and just say, look, I hear what you're saying, I understand it, but if you really want to do a book... on cider around the world, you know, this is a seasonal product. It doesn't get made all year round, or certainly not in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to kind of think about the logistics of getting all of this. And they're like, no. And for 2.5 years, they just kind of said no. But Pete and I carried on. I'd already been doing it since 2004 in terms of photography, so I had a whole archive to call on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they finally said yes, 1 September, I said, right, we're going to do it. He said, we want the book done by Christmas. And I was like, what? You know, how are we supposed to fly around the world and do all this before Christmas? Idiots.
Yeah.
But luckily, because, you know, I'd shot a lot, it was less of a problem. And it turned out to be one of the worst harvests as well. They wanted loads of photos of apples, and it was like the worst year for 20 years for a harvest. But, you know, somehow we kind of, you know, we pushed it on through and we did it. And it was really well received, the book, when it came out. We were so lucky.
Yeah.
And we won a really good award
in
the UK.
Yeah.
The Fortnum & Mason Food and Drink Award. That is, you know, we didn't expect that. Cider is not a sexy drink for that. You know, this is the company that sells tea to the Queen.
Right.
We were up against some new champagne encyclopedia and this, that, and the other. It was like, we've got no chance of winning that. Mm. But I wanted to take my wife along to the awards because she's always missing out. I was like, that'd be a nice night out. We'll just go there and enjoy that. And then, yeah, you know, you guys have won. So, what?
That's wonderful.
It's amazing.
That's wonderful.
And then one of the judges said, it was really kindly, she said, oh, look, that was one of the most important drinks books in the last 20 years because no one's done cider. And we've all kind of missed it, and you guys have totally nailed it. So I was really touched to hear that, you know.
Well, I really appreciate all that you've done. I mean, that book, and then you had the cider manual,
yeah,
and then the guide to Welsh Perry and cider. But the fact that you and Peter got that book out there, won the award, is kudos to you, because you really helped move everyone up. It was like you're rising that tide up with everyone, and it's such an asset in that way.
Well, you know, feeling how I do about cider, it's quite a responsibility. To do that book, or to set those kind of goals and not cock it up, you know, those books tend to really suffer from bad imagery because, you know, there's hardly any budget, and any money that there is tends to go on paying a writer and a designer. So there's two of us right from the start, so stuff was just cut right in half.
Right, right.
But, you know, it was a labour of love for us, and realising no one had done it, and other people are actually starting to try and do the same kind of book at the same time. They thought, well, if we get in there first, we can do it. Somehow we managed to get it all done and dusted. But
that's fantastic.
I was really aware that I wanted the imagery to be really strong,
yeah,
and be consistent.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing, those books often, the imagery is really inconsistent. There's some amazing photography in them. Mm. And there's some really rubbish stuff. And the rubbish stuff brings everything down a little bit.
Mm.
And I just wanted it to be as nice as possible all the way through. And I wanted it to have some soul. Because I think if we could do that, you know, we can write a book that's not too straight, not too, you know, jokey either, kind of consistent imagery, really nice design. We've kind of set the bar, and I don't know, that's, it's kind of a pride thing. I just wanted it to be as good as it could be and represent in everyone as democratically and honestly as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully one day we'll be asked to do a second edition, you know. I'd love to update that.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine that's probably going to happen.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, Bill, I want to really thank you for taking time and chatting here and giving Ciderville an idea of where UK is, even, you know, like sometimes we get so linear, you know, in our thoughts and stepping out of that box and thinking about the potential of going over there. And
you guys are always welcome in England. We're always excited to hear what other people are doing. So, you know, get in touch, let us know, and come and say hi.
Now, if that doesn't inspire you to see how you could create travel plans to get to the UK, I don't know what would. I am certainly hoping to get there actually this fall and head over probably at the height of like busyness, but that's the way it happens. And I wanted to say we both kind of made a little mistake there in the chat. It is the United States Association of Cider Makers. You know, it was just after a long day, or maybe it wasn't a long night of cider the night before. So lots of info there. There's more on the show notes where you get different links where I kind of highlighted some of the things discussed with Bill. And there's also a link to a YouTube clip. I was on Periscope while Bill was chatting at OMSI, and I just kind of took a little snippet of 3 minutes down to give you a sense of that. And in that little clip, you'll see some of the data that he was talking about. I found that really informative. So I had fun with that. There is now a Cider Chat YouTube channel, and there'll be more coming up on that YouTube channel as we go along. While I was getting this podcast out, I got this little email from Jenny, and she's in New Zealand, and she wrote, I'll just give you a little short piece here, but she's in New Zealand, and she said, I'm so grateful for Cider Chat. This information is as good as gold. You know, that's one of my favorite sayings, Jenny. So she and a partner, they discovered the podcast and have been devouring the episodes. They're living in a camper van and touring New Zealand for 3 months. And right now, while she was writing this, she was watching the sunset over the Tasman Sea with a glass of locally brewed Old Mount, like a scrumpy style. So she's going to be returning to Minnesota and looking to start an organic fruit orchard, mostly apples. And, you know, she's getting inspired to have a cidery. The other thing that Jenny mentioned is she likes hearing about internships, much like Neil, what he offered in that chat with Orchard Park Farms. So if you have an internship that you would like to kind of get out there into Ciderville, send me an email, Rhea@ciderchat.com, and I'll let folks know about it. And who knows who could show up there, because there's some amazing people like Jenny and Matt, who also just contacted me while I was here. He's also looking for an internship. So let's connect the dots here and get together and get that cider going. Well, so much indeed happening here. And let me not forget to thank our sponsors at CiderCellars.com. That's cellars as in the place that you keep your barrels to make your perfectly quaffable cider. I'm going to roll out of here now, Ciderville. I miss you already. Till next time, this is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Hoping to see you soon in Ciderville.